O'Reilly Digital Media explores the future of audio, video, and photography. Each show brings you insights from leading experts. Learn more by visiting digitalmedia.oreilly.com.
I'm Derek Story. I'm the digital media evangelist for O'Reilly Media. And I'm here with an author I have never interviewed before.
Doesn't mean I'm hiding in some dark
cave.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's right.
No, you've been busy working on a book. You've been dedicated. You've been teaching. You've been doing all that wonderful
shooting
stuff.
Shooting for it, writing about it, trying to keep up to date with software.
And are you doing any sessions here at Photo Plus Expo?
Yes, I'm doing a session every day in the Adobe booth called The Creative Digital Darkroom.
Yeah, Katrine's working on a book called Creative Digital Darkroom, and that's we're going to talk about not so much the book today, but the thinking behind the book.
Yes.
Yeah, and what's going on there. And one of the things that surprised me is that when I think of you as a Photoshop expert. You're in the Photoshop Hall of Fame and very well known. And we were talking earlier, and one of the things that you've been thinking about is that, well, this book, you need to start thinking at capture.
Right.
And tell me a little bit about that process, because I thought it was fascinating.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Photoshop, and what I'm seeing happen with Photoshop now is people are spending more and more time with Photoshop and less time with their photography. And so the quality of the images seems to be going down, but there always seems to be a new feature, a new filter, a new setting to make poor pictures look good.
Right.
But it's really amazing what happens when you take a good picture, bring it into Photoshop. A, there's a lot less work, and you get better results.
Yeah, it's something that I hear a lot when I'm shooting, even when I'm shooting events as a photographer, and something doesn't go quite right, and people go, oh, don't worry, you can just fix it in Photoshop.
Right.
Well, actually, I don't want to fix it in Photoshop because it's easier for me to take a good picture. It's more efficient than it is to fool around with it later on in Photoshop. It's nice to have the safety net if I need it.
Right.
The other thing, too, shooting RAW.
Absolutely.
You have a lot of data available to you, and if you capture correctly or capture well with RAW, you've got stuff on both ends. You have all sorts of possibilities, don't you?
Right. What I love about RAW is that I have the data, of course, but over the course of weeks, months, and moods, I want to reprocess the same image differently. And artists go through phases. I mean, you look at Ansel Adams, how he printed Moonrise over Hernandez.
I love that series.
There's six, seven, eight different variations.
Of course, by the time Ansel Adams was later in his printing, that print was so dark.
Yep.
What happens there? I wonder.
I think it was the eyesight.
Was it the eyesight?
Yeah, definitely. Either that or his timer was broken.
But, you know, that's actually a nice segue because one of the things that you're talking about, you're actually been working with the metaphor of the chemical darkroom as your workspace for this book.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about what the thinking is there?
Well, I went to the Rochester Institute of Technology in the 80s and early 90s, and they had 160 dark rooms.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I know. They're probably skeletons somewhere in the corner.
Yeah.
And the beauty of that was I felt it was a privilege and an honor to learn about the chemical darkroom, the wet darkroom. I mean, I even learned how to do dye transfer printing.
Yes.
And I know that those skills influence my aesthetics and influence my thinking. But now, in 2007, I'm teaching people that have never been in a darkroom. So it's a challenge to, A, make new analogies and really get them to understand the visual intricacies of making a good print. So I rely on some of the traditional terms and examples and ideas, but we spend a lot of time, in a way, translating that thinking into digital tools for people that have never actually been in a wet darkroom.
So in the wet darkroom, one of the things, because I also am old enough to have worked in those conditions. By the way, I don't miss it, to tell you the truth.
No, I don't. The stained clothing, the yellow fingernails.
Right, the whole thing.
Yep.
Days would go by under the red light. But one of the things that I was trying to do is I was always trying to pull out as much information from the negative as possible. That seemed to be one of the things I was trying to do in the darkroom. How does that translate now in with the tools that we have in Photoshop?
Right.
What are some of the techniques that you and Sean are talking about to really pull everything out that you can of the raw file that you're working with?
Right. Well, first of all, that idea of pulling out, in the darkroom, you had a limitation. You had the limitation of the time of the exposure and the time that the image was in the developer.
Absolutely.
So 30 seconds, maybe 2 minutes, you'd rub, try to heat things up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never really seemed to work very well. You could never be consistent.
No.
Couldn't make two or three complicated prints the same. So the beauty of the digital darkroom is that pressure of the time, of the physics and the chemistry is off of you. So there's lots of things you can do to pull more out of a raw file. Straightforward is how you do the raw processing.
Mm-hmm.
I try to spend time in either Adobe Camera Raw or in Lightroom. And if I spend time in there, I spend much less time in Photoshop. In fact, I'm doing about 80 to 85% of all my work now in Lightroom.
Interesting.
So the more time, if you can do it in RAW,
mm-hmm.
that's where you should be doing your processing.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is if the pure RAW process isn't going to bring out enough detail, because as we know, RAW processing is always global. I can't just circle an area and say, oh, lighten this. Then what we'll do is we'll process the same file two or three times for the shadows, the midtones, and highlights, and use Photoshop to put them together.
Oh, that's interesting. Could you tell me a little bit more about that? So, I mean, it's one of the things I like about Adobe Camera Raw, the new version, 4.0.
Right.
Even though there are global adjustments, you can work on certain color areas and all that sort of stuff. So even though technically it's global, you can affect
yes.
specific areas. But this idea of actually running it through ACR a few times and then putting it together in Photoshop, could you
right.
say a little bit more about that?
What's interesting, you know, when we used to walk around with, like, chrome film in our cameras,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would wake up in the morning, look out the window. If it was cloudy, I would grab chrome, Kodachrome.
Mm-hmm.
If it was sunny, it's a good day for color negative.
Yes.
So the weather was determining what I was shooting, even though I never really liked color negative.
Yeah.
All right? So that was already a limitation. And if I had the wrong film in the camera, I would come up to a scene, and it'd be like, it's going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't even take the picture,
mm-hmm.
you know, because either not enough contrast, too much contrast, too broad a dynamic range, because I didn't want to waste, you know, waste the film, waste
well,
the effort.
We all were thinking about that. That was one
That's
of the
right.
things about film. And I ran into the same problem with ISO, too.
Right.
I'd be in a situation, I had the wrong ISO in the camera, and say, you know, forget it.
That's right. And you try to rewind the little film,
mm-hmm.
and it would never work.
Mm-hmm.
So what digital lets you do is actually lets you see, when I'm looking through the viewfinder, I'm seeing the raw processor. I'm seeing Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm already imagining, this is what I can do, and now I need to actually photograph the information I need. When you're shooting film, you're concentrating on making the right exposure.
Mm-hmm.
When shooting digital, you're concentrating on capturing the right information.
So all of your options are open
yep.
later on.
Yep. It's a different way of thinking. It's a lot broader.
So now when you're working with ACR, and let's say that you do one type of adjustment, and you output it to Photoshop.
True.
Would you run that same raw file again through ACR, make some other adjustments, and would those outputs then become layers in Photoshop? Or?
Well, there's two ways that you can approach it.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamental way would be, yes, process it two or three times, once
mm-hmm.
for your shadows, once your highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have both files open, and you would shift-drag one file on top of another.
Okay.
But what we're doing now with CS3, which is even more exciting, is from Camera Raw, we're bringing the files in as smart objects.
Oh, yes.
So you bring it as a smart object, and what that does is it lets me do raw processing in Photoshop. So I'll have that smart object and then duplicate it, not by dragging it down to the new layer button, but actually by using the menu, duplicate,
mm-hmm.
and then I can process it again and then use the layer masks. And at any time, go back and reprocess, but I'm in Photoshop. So I don't need to keep track of where is that file and, oh, I misprocessed it. Oh, I wanted to do a little bit more. Because with smart objects, RAW is in the Photoshop layer.
That is really interesting. So when you're working on a landscape, for example, let's say with a bright sky of different things going on in the
right.
foreground, maybe some dark areas, I could see two or three rounds of this in order to hold all those tones that you want.
Exactly. That's a very good example. And then you also want to push it further and think, oh, what can I do in terms of focus?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good point.
So, you know, how can I enhance the depth of field or how can I soften certain areas so you can actually process and filter also with smart objects. You have smart filters.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really play with what's in focus and what's not without ever actually having to commit. Our whole premise mm-hmm. is we want to have the photographer have as much flexibility, creativity, and control. And if you put those three together, creativity and control, we're mad scientists.
You can do a lot of crazy stuff, yeah.
yeah.
So, like kids with a little chemistry set. So what's your feeling about sharpening? You know, where is sharpening? Let's talk about landscape, for example.
All right.
I mean, obviously you don't want to sharpen a sky, and you know, but where in the process do you sharpen, and what are some of the pointers that you have around sharpening?
Well, we spend a great deal of time talking about sharpening in the book. And that's one another advantage that digital has over film. There's no sharpening knob in the darkroom, in the enlarger. And so I'm not talking about missed focus, but just the pure physics of putting light through a lens and then the filter on the CCD and the digitization adds softness to an image. So we're big proponents of the three-step sharpening, where you sharpen once for your input to offset the inherent softness that any raw file has. And then aesthetic sharpening. Some people call it creative sharpening, where I'm really deciding, where do I want the viewer's eye to look?
Right.
That would be the selective.
That yucca plant in the foreground, for example, might be something that you'd want to sharpen that up a little bit aesthetically.
Exactly. And it's not, I don't want the viewer to notice it.
Yeah.
Oh, look, that's sharper.
Yeah.
I should look at it.
Right.
So, and then finally, for output sharpening, because different inks and especially different papers are going to influence the sharpness again.
Right.
Now, to be honest, if I had to decide between no sharpening or over sharpening, I would be going with the no sharpening camp.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's one reputation that digital has that looks a little too crunchy.
Yeah,
too tight.
And sometimes people just get a little heavy-handed and maybe only are doing one-step sharpening too. You know,
right.
So they're just trying to solve the whole problem at one place. But I'm really glad that you brought up output sharpening because I think a lot of times people don't realize you can have it on the screen the way you want.
Right.
You're ready to go, but then depending on what your output choice is going to influence the sharpening decisions that you make for that output. And that's another whole thing you have to think about.
Yeah, no, a monitor, an LCD or CRTs, which aren't around very much, can't really show you what it's really going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to show you. But an LCD is going to also add softness, and different types of LCDs add different amount of softness.
Right.
So the only way to really judge sharpness is you need to make the print.
Yes.
So what you can do is it's very easy now in CS3 to make test strips, where you take a crop and you hit print, and then there's a little checkbox that says center the image, uncheck it, move the first test strip over, print it. New test strip, you print it in the center, and the third one you'd move it to the right. So you can really compare very easily.
Oh, that's very nice. So you're actually comparing sharpness on the very
paper.
Thing you're going to be looking at. What printer are you using in your studio?
I'm in love with the Epson 3800.
That's a nice printer. Yeah,
it's fast. It's quiet. And, you know, I got it, and I waited, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, we need prints. I'm like, I haven't tested it.
Yes.
Turned it on, boom, 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 download the profiles. I was done.
And are you a fan of letting the application control the color management, when you're making your prints with your Epson? Or?
Well, if the application is called Lightroom or Photoshop, I am.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. I don't, I'm sure that there's good uses for, you know, the Epson driver to do it or I use the Macintosh for the system to do it. But the beauty of, like, doing it out of Photoshop is I can actually see what I'm going to get. So Photoshop is so good in terms of color management, and now it's actually I can actually see it and control it, that artists were compulsive. You know, if I've gotten that far, I want to control it. So I let the Adobe products control the output.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you're processing your RAW in anything else other than, or if you've tested anything else other than the ACRs. Have you looked at Capture, any of those?
Well, there's Capture, and then there's an excellent program called DxO.
Right. They just have a new release, don't they?
I don't know if I should say this, but it's really interesting.
No, it's fine to say.
They took a different approach versus, oh, it's not just about color and interpolation, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
They really approach it from an optical point of view that, like, every lens adds distortion, softness, vignetting. And then you might go, oh, no, I spent $1,800 on my lens. My lens is perfect.
Right.
But until you see that distortion taken away, you don't
really
know.
Exactly.
And it's a very smart company, really stunning, and the results are very, very good.
No, I'm a real fan of, have all the tools that you think you need and then use the best tool for the job. And,
right.
And I've been hearing a lot of good things about processing with them also. Just one last question before I let you get on to your next interview. But, you teach a lot.
Yes.
What's the one thing that you hear in class a lot in terms of questions or things that people are just really grappling, trying to get their head around in post-production, that we might want to share here?
Yeah, well, the two things that most people are really grappling with from a technical point of view are the two things you can't really hold on to. I would love to be able to give someone, you know, Profoto RGB, and it would be a heavier color space.
Yeah.
You know, versus sRGB, which would be like a little lightweight.
Yes.
You know, so people are still grappling with color management because there's a lot of concepts involved in it. Mm-hmm. As Bruce Fraser said, color management is push button easy as long as you know which one of the 600 buttons to push.
Exactly, exactly.
So it takes effort. Now, the thing is, once you put the effort in, you want to stay with that system and mm-hmm. be consistent. And then people are still grappling with the digital asset management.
Yes, yeah.
Because digital photographers, we have a very heavy shutter finger.
Yes. It's you fun. Know. It's fun to shoot. It's burst mode is fun.
Exactly. But burst mode of like a rock.
Yeah. You're right. But you only get the light falling on the rock just right.
That's right.
It's different than what happened 2 seconds ago.
Right. So they're also grappling with the aesthetics.
Yeah.
You know, because things are changing very, very quickly. They see a lot of images online. You know, they see someone being successful, and they want you know, critique and want to mm-hmm. become better photographers, too.
Absolutely.
So there has to be a balance between the aesthetic and the technical.
Absolutely. So the book, The Creative Digital Darkroom, and if people that want to find out more what you're up to, where's a good place to go?
The easiest thing to do is to go to KatrineEisman.com, because mm-hmm. there's links to the 6 websites that I actually take care of. And if you click on those, you'll actually learn more about me than you'd ever want to know.
And that's EISMANN.
Yes, thank
correct?
You.
Yes,
exactly.
Katrine Eisman. Well, it's a pleasure having you here. I really look forward to stealing as many techniques as I can out of your book and writing
fun.
About it. And good luck with the rest of the show.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
This show was produced and is copyrighted by O'Reilly Media. For more podcasts, tutorials, reviews, weblogs, tips, and tricks, visit O'Reilly Digital Media at digitalmedia.oreilly.com.